Oh, anytime he drops in a couple of Boogie Nights references, it's a good day.
We are coming up on the 25th anniversary of Boogie Nights, like the release. It's coming up, I want to say, in October.
Highly underrated film.
It's so great.
You got to be in the right mood, but then again, who's not in a mood for Boogie Nights? So I mentioned this, that Stephen A. Smith was, you know, he gives a lot of opinions, but the truth is Stephen A. knows the NBA really well. That's his bread and butter. And I was shocked when he proclaimed who he thinks might be the MVP this year. Listen to this.
Text it right now. I'm not only going to, we'll revisit this another time. I'll go a step further. I got Kyrie Irving as one of my top league MVP candidates. I think Kyrie Irving going to put on a show this year. Everybody better brace themselves because the brother playing for a new contract. He playing for a new contract. Listen, it matters. $200 million plus matters.
I didn't say it did.
It matters now.
I'm just like,
you a capitalist. Come
on
now.
The first thing you did is went to the money.
I'm saying it's not an insult. I'm just a hell.
He's got fresh legs, too.
The money. Listen, Bradley Beal got $200 million.
He's going to get $200 million. If he does anything remotely close to what you're saying, he's going to get the money.
No, because that involves years.
Anything remotely close to what you said, he's going to get the money.
People, listen, and I believe that that's what he's going to have to do to get the money. Because in the process of balling, he got to convince folks that he's going to show up to work, which I believe he will. Pass is the pass. I'm looking forward. I got Kyrie Irving as a league MVP candidate. This brother is going to put on a show.
He's not far off
from
that.
And I think KD is just going to be KD. If anything, KD going to get in the way of his MVP aspirations because KD in his sleep is going to do what he does.
All right, Andy. Kyrie Irving was not close to an MVP caliber player last year when he refused to get vaccinated. The Nets crashed and burned. But I've always liked Kyrie. Michael thinks he's the best one-on-one player in the NBA. Would you be surprised if he was an MVP candidate this year?
I would be surprised if he's like in the top five for MVP voting. I do think he's going to have a really good season for exactly the reason Stephen A. said, contract.
Do you think I assume you think he's going to start the season in Brooklyn.
Oh, yeah.
Does he finish the season in Brooklyn?
Yeah. Assuming they're good, yeah.
Even if they offer him a new contract and he turns it down, in other words, he could walk away for nothing?
Yeah, because if Brooklyn is playing well, you take your chances on maybe winning a championship, and then if you lose him, you lose him. You still got what you wanted from this whole fiasco to begin with, which was a championship. So, yeah, I think as long as the Nets are playing well, I think even if they know Kyrie's going to walk, they're not going to move him.
This may be me being a little bit of a homer. So I'll qualify it by saying this. If he stays healthy, if he plays 65 games, I think Anthony Davis could be first-team All-NBA and possibly an MVP candidate. Is that me being a homer, or do you buy it?
No, that's actually you laying out what the Lakers need from Anthony Davis. I mean, I'll be honest. If Anthony Davis does not have a season at that level this year, it not only affects whatever window you have with LeBron and whatever you consider the LeBron era, it also calls into question how much longer do we want to have the Anthony Davis era? Because he was supposed to be the guy by now, really taking that baton from LeBron, really being the engine of the metaphorical car that LeBron would be steering. And if for whatever reason it feels like AD just is not that guy, you have to really start reevaluating what the future is actually going to be for this organization.
Speaking of that, let me ask you a question. So I've said to anybody who will listen that the biggest problem with the Lakers last year was their defense.
It was terrible.
If you bring someone like you and I get asked to go on other shows and podcasts and stuff all the time, and I tell people this, that if you're bringing on a quote-unquote Lakers expert or somebody to talk Lakers, and they don't say the word defense in the first 30 seconds, then they didn't watch our games. It was the biggest problem with our team last year. And everybody, Andy, everybody was guilty of taking possessions off on defense,
yep,
including the big three. Including Russ, LeBron, and AD. But the team defense collectively was awful. The good news is, I think Darvin Ham not only recognizes that, but is basically staking his first head coaching job on that. That everybody has to play defense or we die. And the very first thing I would say if I was Darvin in the very first meeting with whatever the roster is going to be in 2 weeks is, guys, if we're going to do anything this season, we can't be a good defensive team. We have to be an elite defensive team. We have to be a top 10 defensive team in the NBA. And I think, Andy, the only way to send that message is if a guy decides to take possessions off on defense, Darvin's got to pull him out. Now, here's my question. We know he'll do that to Kendrick Nunn or Austin Reeves, and we think he would do it to Westbrook. If LeBron and AD take possessions off defensively, can Darvin take him out, or does it create such a political problem that he can't do it?
Well, I don't even know about necessarily the politics. It creates a practical problem. Like, if a game is really close and LeBron or AD blow a few possessions, you can't take him out of that game necessarily, because you take them out, you're definitely going to lose.
Right.
But what he does need to do is make sure he's making a thing out of it during film sessions. And, you know, he can mention after the game, yeah, we managed to win, but our defense, particularly from our stars, needs to be better. Like, I think you can call out guys in different ways. Like, it's pulling out Austin Reeves or Kendrick Nunn is different than pulling out, like you said, LeBron or AD. But that doesn't mean that you can't send a message anyway. Like, the rules are always going to be different for stars in some respects.
Sure.
You're not going to always hold them accountable in the exact same ways. You just got to make sure you're holding them accountable.
Greg, do you think Darvin Ham has the – I don't even know what the right word is. Do you think he can get away with benching anybody, including the big three, if they don't play defense?
No. The only one – actually, I do think they can put Russ on the bench. I think that's the only of the guy of the big three, if they don't play defense, he can bench. But the other two, there's absolutely not. Everybody else, yes, totally allowed. He'll be able to move anybody. But nobody's telling LeBron what to do. Nobody's telling AD what to do.
Well, here's the thing, too. If LeBron and especially AD are consistently not playing defense, none of this
then
matters.
Yeah, then you're
team's
dead
gonna
anyway.
Be terrible anyway.
Yeah, that's a really good point. But I hope these guys all realize that if you lock in defensively, you have a chance to have a really good season. All right. Andy, you went to USC, correct?
Yeah.
All right. USC, believe it or not, has moved up to number 7 in the college football rankings. And I read a USA Today article that says they have a 19, this is only week 2. They only played 2 games. They have a 19% chance to make the playoff, according to USA Today. The 4 teams that USA Today has in the playoff right now are Alabama, Ohio State, Georgia, and Clemson. But if one of those teams loses, they said the 2 teams to keep an eye on are Michigan and USC. I think Michigan's going to lose to Ohio State. I think USC can run the table. I'm worried about them at Utah. I think that's their toughest test. Notre Dame looks like they stink. As a Trojan alum, are we, after just 2 games, are we overhyping Lincoln Riley and USC?
No. They look really good. They look really, really good.
I don't know, Greg, if we're ever going to see USC punt.
They shouldn't ever punt, but over.
I mean, they have so much speed and so much talent offensively that something's going to go wrong if the punter steps on the field.
I tweeted this out during the Stanford game. Like, glass half empty, USC's defense looks vulnerable. Half glass full, USC doesn't need a defense. Like, Caleb Williams is incredible.
Yeah.
He's absolutely incredible.
So is Mario Williams, and so is Jordan Addison, and, you know, all these dudes are...
Yeah, they're fantastic.
Are just...
That offense is just so explosive and looks impossible to cover, and their defense has been vulnerable, but they're also really opportunistic. So
best offense a money can buy.
If you... So what?
I'm not just saying.
I mean,
yeah, why didn't we do that?
You guys should have.
Why didn't UCLA throw a bunch of money at Jordan Addison? Oh, yeah.
I'm not saying it was a bad thing. I'm just saying it is the best thing you can buy.
Right. Like UCLA has no rich alums. Get on it.
They apparently don't because they're not buying people.
Well, what are you talking about? Get Casey Wasserman on the phone. Where do
seriously?
We can buy some people. What the heck?
Don't direct.
He got rid of all of his money getting rid of Alford.
Don't direct your jealousy. Don't direct your jealousy towards USC. Direct your anger towards the Casey Wassermans of the world.
I love Casey.
What about Ovitz? He's a UCLA guy. Yeah. Get him to give us some money. I don't think we're overhyping USC. I think they have a legitimate chance to be in the college football playoff this year. I really do. Hey, when you were a kid, did you collect baseball cards, football cards?
Not really, no.
Greg, you?
Yes, I have a giant box that's worth nothing.
Okay, I had a giant box, and I gave it to some friend of mine's brother when I grew out of it. I now really, really, really wish I didn't do that, and I'll explain why coming up next. Mason in Ireland, Andy Kamenetsky in for Mace, ESPN LA. All right, today it's Andy Kamenetsky in Ireland, Mason in Ireland. By the way, Andy's game today. In about half an hour, we'll play Game of Games. We've been talking about this. You want to visit Islands with Mason and Bergman and Jorge? There's no better place to get a great burger and fries with an ice-cold beer on top. Right now, caller number 7 wins. 877-710-ESPN. You get dinner for you and a guest at Islands with Mason, Bergman, and Jorge. Islands. For locations and directions, visit islandsrestaurant.com. We'll do that right now. 877-710-3776. Okay, so I mentioned this, Andy. Justin Herbert, tomorrow night, great Thursday night game to start off for Amazon. Oh, and I mentioned this too earlier. Starting tomorrow night, most of the country is going to have to get Amazon Prime in order to watch Thursday night football. That's going to be your only way to do it.
Yep.
Unless, Andy, one of your local teams is in the game, like tomorrow night, Chargers are in the game. So Channel 11 is picking it up.
Oh.
So you can watch it on Channel 11 tomorrow. But starting next Thursday, if you want to watch it, you've got to figure out Amazon Prime. And there's several different ways to get it. I use Amazon Prime every day.
So do I.
But you get a reprieve of sorts tomorrow night if you don't want to if you don't want to buy Amazon Prime, you can watch it on Channel 11. They're going to televise the game. All right, so this blew me away. How old do you think Justin Herbert is?
24?
Perfect. 24 years old, okay? Third year in the NFL. Yesterday, Justin Herbert became the third NFL player to have a card, like a football card, sell for at least $1 million with two such sales this past week. A Herbert rookie card, his 2020 Panini National Treasures Platinum.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
One of one sold Saturday for $1.8 million.
Wow.
$1.8 million, a Justin Herbert football card. Then a 2020 Panini Prism Black Finite Herbert rookie card, also numbered one for one, sold for $1.1 million earlier in the week. The card was graded a 9 by Beckett Grading. And so two cards for almost $3 million. The only other NFL players whose cards have sold for at least $1 million are Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady. And now Justin Herbert is in that club. Herbert's collectible sales have increased, according to eBay, 325% from last August to this August. Trading card sales increased by 163%, 36% respectively. So in other words, 24-year-old Justin Herbert, if you're just out buying football cards like a kid at a drugstore, you get a Justin Herbert rookie card. For God's sakes, hang on to it. I don't know if Justin Herbert's going to turn out to be like a Hall of Famer, but a lot of people in that industry think he will. And because of that, his cards now, Andy, are literally money.
I did not realize that football card culture was a thing like this.
Yeah, neither did I.
I mean, everybody knows about baseball cards and the way those become collectibles and like how valuable stuff like that can become. I didn't realize it was the same thing for the NFL.
I was one of those guys that collected cards till I was probably, got into high school.
Right.
Then I outgrew it, and I gave all my cards to one of my brother's friends. And my mom told me, do not give up these cards. You'll regret it later. I go, I don't care, Mom. Here, I'll let the kid have them. I don't even look at them anymore. And now I wonder what the heck I gave up. I wonder what was in that box. Do you have any cards?
No. Actually, that's not true. Somebody found for me, I don't even remember who, but they found a few Cardinals from like the 80s, the guys I used to grow up watching, like Willie McGee and Ozzie Smith and Jose Oquendo. Like they found a few cards like that and passed them along to me.
Right.
So I've got maybe three or four, but not many, no.
Yeah. And so the moral of this story is, and the reason I'm bringing it up for all of you, is if you have cards, football cards, you never know who's going to pop.
Yeah, well,
so
Justin Herbert looks
things.
Like a guy that's going to pop, though.
Yeah. What do you like tomorrow night? Chargers at Chiefs.
I like the Chiefs. A, they're at home. B, the Chargers are going to be missing a few key players. You know, Keenan Allen, most importantly.
Right.
And, you know, Arrowhead is a hard place to win anyway. Although, this could matter. The Chiefs are going to be without Harrison Butker, their kicker. And he's really good. So if it becomes a really close
game.
Wait
a minute. He's out
game? Let me double check, but I believe he is out. I believe I saw that earlier that he's been ruled out.
Because that's my fantasy football kicker, and I think I just blew it because what's today? Wednesday?
Today is Wednesday.
Ooh, okay. I can do it. I can replace him by tomorrow.
Let me double check, but I believe he is out.
Okay.
Harrison Butker is out.
Yep. Okay.
Your league is dumb.
I can replace him now.
You can send him up until email.
Thursday at noon.
But that's a big deal, though. He's really good.
By the way, Greg, I can't even send an email. I have to send a raven, like on Game of Thrones. There's no electronic communication allowed in our league.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, so he'll be getting replaced. I've got to find somebody else who can kick just for one game. Okay, do you guys know who Candace Buckner is?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Basketball player.
She's from St. Louis, actually.
No, Candace Buckner is from St. Louis. She's a columnist, Greg. She writes for the Washington Post.
Oh. Yeah, she's awesome.
I met her when she was writing for the Post, and she came out to do a story on Scott Brooks, and I was playing around a golf with Brooks, and she followed us around. Super cool.
She's a terrific writer, terrific person.
Okay, so on Sunday, you mentioned she grew up in St. Louis,
mm-hmm.
So she's a big Albert Pujols fan.
Yep.
She realized that Albert Pujols was playing in Pittsburgh, and it's a 4.5-hour drive from D.C., but it was a Sunday. So she said, I'm just going to get up in the morning, drive, go to the game in Pittsburgh, go see Albert Pujols. So it's kind of a boring game. Pirates are leading 1-0, gets to be the seventh inning, and she says, 4.5-hour drive.
Oh, no.
Back to D.C.
Oh, no.
I'm gonna bail. I'm going to head for the exits. So she throws the radio on and she leaves. Pujols comes up in the ninth and hits home run number 697, passing A-Rod. And she wrote a column about this is why you should never, ever, under any circumstances, leave a game early. Because you just never know. Now, obviously, Andy, I can never leave a Laker game early because I'm calling the game. So I'm staying till the end no matter what the score is and where it is. But I have an admission to make. Any other game I'm at as a fan, I almost always leave early.
Do you really?
And I have No regrets. Dodgers, particularly two venues, Dodger Stadium and the Rose Bowl. If you get stuck trying to get out of Dodger Stadium or the Rose Bowl, it's 2 hours of your life that you will never get back. Do you ever leave sporting events early?
Only if it is such an absolute blowout that the game has actually become incredibly boring. But it's got to be really extreme. Like, I tend to be, on general principle, if I paid money to do this, I am getting the most out of my money.
Bergman, you ever leave a game early?
Yeah, it just depends on which game it is.
Yeah.
A lot of times I do.
Like, I give Mason a hard time about this because he leaves early all the time, but he won't admit that he leaves early. And what he doesn't know is that I leave early no matter what. But if he comes to a Laker game and leaves at halftime, if he goes and he says, I never leave a Rams game early. If the Rams are losing 44-3, he's leaving. But I don't think you should have to. Jorge, do you think you should have to apologize for leaving a game early?
No.
I got things to do, man. Particularly if I'm with kids.
Oh, yeah. No, kids.
And kids say, Dad, I want to go. We're out of there.
Kids absolutely change the math on this.
Right. Like, why is there a scarlet letter for people that leave early?
I think if you leave early with no kids, it's basically just, I'm trying to beat traffic.
Of course I am.
Right. But in terms of like the fan experience or being there for your team, like a lot of fans feel like it's a badge of honor to earn this thing, even though they're really not earning anything.
Correct.
Like they're really
not.
I hate to
inform you, fan, you deciding to stay or go has literally no impact on the result of the game.
I will amend this a little bit. You are earning something if you hang in there with a team or a franchise that is consistently awful.
What if you're a Jets fan? You shouldn't make like people stay till the end of those
games. Well, just being a Jets fan, period, you're earning this. But like if you're a fan of the Lakers, for example, recent history notwithstanding, have been historically great, I'm sorry, you've earned nothing with your fandom. Like, you've been treated incredibly well. If you're a Dodger fan, you have not earned bleep in this entire experience. I grew up a fan of the now Arizona, then St. Louis Cardinals, the football team.
Right, Jim Hart, Terry Metcalf.
Neil Lomax.
Yeah.
Bill Bidwell, considered then maybe the worst owner in sports.
Might still be.
I earned my fandom. Like, growing up, that was fandom I earned. But, like, I'm a Laker fan. I'll say this. I haven't earned a thing. Like, that's been easy for the most part. Easy.
I just think that people that leave early get a bad rap. You got things to do. You got places to be. Things to do.
Especially in this city.
Yeah, come on.
Here's the people that really get a bad rap. And this is something that's affected, like, the national perception, particularly of Laker fans, getting to the game late, like getting there 5 minutes in the first quarter. It is murder getting to Crypto at 7:30 on a weekday for people that work. Like, cut people some slack.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, coming up. Andy, have you ever written a book?
Yes.
How many? Just one?
Just one.
What was it about?
It was about Mike Iaconelli, who was considered the Dennis Rodman of professional bass fishing.
Okay. Is there?
Wait, what?
I have many questions about this.
Number one on the New York Times bestseller for an entire year, believe it or not.
For any reason, would you go on a public crusade to tell people not to read your own book?
If it's for the reason that the author that I know who you're talking about is doing it, yes, I would.
An author has come out and basically gone viral over the fact that he is begging people, begging multiple times for them not to buy his book, not to read it. Don't go to the library. Don't buy it. We'll explain coming up next. Bergman, what do you got?
All right, so tomorrow night is the night. Thursday night football is now Amazon's Prime night of football because every Thursday night football game is only on Prime Video. Beginning September 15th, watch the NFL's biggest stars compete every Thursday night of the season. And to kick things off, two of the NFL's most exciting teams battle it out as the Los Angeles Chargers travel to Kansas City to take on the Chiefs. Watch the games on any device and visit Amazon.com/TNF for more. The new era of Thursday night football is officially here, and it's only on Prime Video. Restrictions apply. See Amazon.com/Amazon Prime for details.
Today, it's Andy Kamenetsky in Ireland, and Andy's game for Game of Games is coming up in about 10 minutes. First of all, I have questions about this book you wrote. How did you end up writing a book about a bass fisherman?
Years ago, Brian and I, my brother Brian, by the way, it's Brian's birthday, so
happy birthday, BK.
Hey, aren't you the guy who does the Lakers dance party hoedown on your phone?
That is a young Ethan, Brian's son, who once asked Greg that question.
But he does it now.
Yeah, he kind of does. Brian and I, years ago, for ESPN the magazine, wrote a profile of this guy, Mike Iaconelli, who was considered like the Dennis Rodman of bass fishing. He was, you know, by bass fishing standards, very wild and over the top, which meant like he had tattoos. He was loud by that sports standard. He was really into like hip hop at one point.
I have no doubt that all of these things are true.
Mm-hmm.
How did you end up writing a book about him?
This is what I'm explaining. We wrote an article about him, like an ESPN the magazine article, so he got to know us. He ended up a couple years later getting a book deal. And the original writer that he was supposed to be writing with, he's considered like the foremost journalist in bass fishing, they had creative differences and parted ways. So they needed a new guy to help him write this book, and Mike recommended us. So the publishing company, just out of nowhere, called Brian and I and said, do you guys want to write Mike Iaconelli's autobiography? So it's Fishing on the Edge. I'm tweeting out the cover at Cam Brothers if people want to look at it. And
it did well?
Did fine.
Okay, you made money on it?
We did make money, yeah, okay. I got paid. It sold very well in the Jewish suburbs of St. Louis.
Excellent.
I can tell you that. A lot of copies sold there.
Okay, so Jeff Perlman is a writer who's written several books. Many, many good. As a matter of fact, he wrote the book that Winning Time is based on, about the Showtime Lakers.
He's got a new book coming out on Bo Jackson.
He's written books on Barry Bonds. He's written books on the Dallas Cowboys.
He's a fantastic writer.
Really good writer. And he wrote Winning Time's, basically the book that Winning Time is based on. And Jeff's a very good writer.
He also wrote a book about the Kobe Shaq era as well.
Right, which a lot of people think will be.
It is. It winning, has been
optioned. Winning
option.
Time will
it's
cover
been
those years
it.
Eventually. But one of the books Jeff wrote back in the day was about Brett Favre.
Mm-hmm.
And Brett Favre is in the news this week for all the wrong reasons. It turns out, and there are text messages, and you can want to go down the rabbit hole, you can read all about it, that Brett took money that was designated to help poor people in Mississippi and funneled it so he could build a new volleyball arena at his old school, Southern
Miss. His daughter was going to be, I believe, played volleyball there. It also should be noted, Mississippi, one of the poorest states in the United States.
Right. And so when this revelation came out, Jeff Perlman went to social media. And I'm racking my brain here, Andy. You know more writers than I do. Can you ever think of any example or situation where a writer publicly denounced his own book, told people, came out hard to tell people, don't buy my book? Because I can't think of another instance.
No, not off the top of my head. I can't.
All right, so this is what Jeff tweeted yesterday. He saw that story about Brett Favre. He says, when I wrote the book about Brett Favre, I kind of glorified him. I made him into a hero. I looked the other way on some of the shady things about him, and I wrote a very flattering book about Brett Favre. So here's what Jeff tweeted. Looking at it now, if I'm being brutally honest, I'd advise people not to read my book. He's a bad guy. He doesn't deserve the icon treatment. He doesn't deserve acclaim, image rehabilitation, warm stories of gridiron glory. His treatment of Jennifer Sturger was inexcusable. Now, you remember, she was the one who was the Jets video board, scoreboard reporter, and he made a bunch of passes at her and sent her pictures of his junk, and it was, and she was kind of shamed throughout
all
that.
Yes, she was.
And Brett, there was no fallout for Brett after that happened. So he says his treatment of Jen Sturger was inexcusable, and now, taking money that was designated to help poor people in his state, and funneling it to build an effing volleyball arena is so grotesque, so monstrous. I don't know how someone like that looks in the mirror. I just don't. So sincerely, don't buy the book. Take it out from the library. Leave it. There are so many better people worthy of your reading hours, of your time. I prefer crumbs like Brett shuffle off into the abyss, shamed by greed and selfishness. This is pretty unprecedented for a writer, isn't it?
I can't recall a writer ever doing anything like that before. But, like, this is the problem sometimes with writing in terms of the permanence of it. Like, once you write something and it's been published or it's online,
it's on the record.
Yeah. And I mean, there, as somebody, you know, I've done a lot of writing over the years for ESPN, the LA Times, the Athletic, you know, not maybe to this degree with the way Jeff feels about this book, but there are definitely pieces where I'm like, man, I'd like to have that one back. Or you're just like, I don't like the way this was phrased. Or if I knew.
Is there one that's at the top of that list, or is that just you're saying in general?
I mean, sometimes it comes down to I wish I had written that better.
Right.
Like, you know, 10 years ago, I don't think I was as good a writer as I am now.
Right.
Or, you know, I think with Jeff, and I don't know this for a fact, but I think this was one of Jeff's earlier books. So if I'm correct about that, when you're starting out, you may be at the time a little more apprehensive about alienating either the subject of the book or people within the industry because you're worried about your next book. You're worried about the books that Jeff does. He needs people to cooperate.
Right.
And if people are not cooperating, because he doesn't do a lot of, you know, off the record anonymous sourcing stuff. Jeff's books have a lot of on the record good stuff, and that requires cooperation. So if you alienate people, you may be messing yourself up for your next book. I can't promise that's what went on with Jeff. I haven't talked to them about
right.
it. I know Jeff, but I have never spoken with him about this. I'm just saying it wouldn't surprise me if there were elements of being apprehensive to go there, because it sounds like Jeff felt like in the moment, yeah, maybe I'm laying this on a little thick.
Yeah, but I think it's pretty unprecedented for an author of a book to come out and tell people, don't buy my book, don't read it. You've got to have a pretty stern moral compass
Jeff,
to go there.
Jeff is somebody that is not, A, he's not afraid to express how he feels about stuff, and B, I think he likes to hold people to standards, including himself.
Yeah, it's interesting. So bottom line, don't read the Brett Favre book, because Jeff Perlman, the author, says it's a bunch of crap. coming up next, Game of Games, Andy Kamenetsky's game. It'll be me, it'll be Jorge, it'll be Bergman, anybody from the afternoon show playing, Greg?
Love both.
And Cappy will be in here to play with us. We'll do it next, ESPN LA. All right, no Mace today, but Andy Kamenetsky has us amply covered, and it's his game today, and we welcome to the program the star of Sedano and Cap, Scott Kaplan. Hi, Cap. How are you?
Oh, I'm far from the star.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Sedano will get mad at that. One of the stars of the Sedano and Cap extravaganza.
I don't know, man.
Okay, so, Andy, it's your game today. What have you come up with?
Well, today, on this day in 1985, the Golden Girls debuted on NBC. Dorothy, played by Bea Arthur. Rose, played by Betty White. Blanche, Rue McClanahan. Sophia, Estelle Getty. I love the show, and I really have grown to appreciate it because it's my wife's all-time favorite show.
Really?
Yes, and since being with her, she's listening now, hey, baby, I have rewatched every episode multiple times.
Well, if you're
times.
Like me and you watch the Hallmark Channel, it's on every
yes,
night, all night, but I've never seen this show.
Are you? What?
I know. What? I know what it is, and I recognize what? This song. But I have never. I know it's about four old women who live together in Florida.
You've
right?
never seen The Golden Girls?
Correct.
What the hell is wrong with
what?
You?
Wow. Right,
so I'm going to
wow.
be at a. It sounds like I'm going to be at a severe
yes,
disadvantage here.
Yes,
right.
you are. It seriously, the show holds up incredibly well. You
right,
could start it
see.
Now.
I'm good at faking it.
Okay, so
swag
here we go.
System, Jorge.
That's right.
Golden Girls trivia for everybody.
Oh, gosh.
Cappy as well. First question: what was the average age of the four actresses when the show debuted? Over under 60 years old.
On
John
the show
goes
or off
first.
The show.
As the actresses.
So this is in real life.
In real life.
During the taping.
Yes, during the taping.
This is, just ask me over under, yes or no.
Over under. Okay, 60 years old.
I think you want me to say over, so I'm going to say under.
Jorge.
Under.
Under.
Scott.
Yeah, because I felt the same way John Ireland felt. I'm going to go over.
You are all on the board. It is 50.
Well,
Cappy said over.
Sorry,
we all said under.
Sorry, I misunderstood him. Cappy, you should have gone with the group.
It was 59.
59.75 was the average age of these girls. So
okay,
just
scary,
under the wire.
Scary thing.
These girls. Yep.
Right now, I am 59.75.
You're a golden boy.
Golden boy.
And I believe that Travis and Slee were referred to Mason and I and Cap and Sedano as the golden girls. So
well, there you go.
Now it's appropriate.
I'm telling you, you should watch this show, John.
Okay.
The golden girls were known for their love of cheesecake. They ate an estimated 100 cheesecakes over the show's entire run. In real life, which golden girls actress hated cheesecake? Bea Arthur, Rue McClanahan, Betty White, or Estelle Getty? Jorge goes first. Bea Arthur, Rue McClanahan, Betty White, or Estelle Getty?
The second one.
Rue McClanahan.
Yeah, Ruma.
It's not rheumatoid arthritis.
Ruma, Jorge.
Yeah. Ken Lee.
Betty White.
Cap.
I'm going with Ruma, too.
Okay, well, King.
I could deviate.
My wife is going to be so mad with this Rue McClanahan disrespect. <Okay. laughs>
But on the show, I'm just going to base on the characters. Rue McClanahan, well, Estelle Getty was kind of a crank from what I remember. I am also going to say Rue McClanahan.
You are all wrong. The answer is Bea Arthur.
Hated cheesecake?
In real life.
Come
she
on,
hated
Maude.
Cheesecake.
What's up with that?
Okay, right, number three. In real life, none of the four Golden Girls, the actresses, were especially close except for these two. Which two were close? Betty White and Bea Arthur? Rue McClanahan and Estelle Getty? Rue McClanahan and Betty White? Or Bea Arthur and Estelle Getty? Betty White and Bea Arthur, Rue McClanahan and Estelle Getty, Rue McClanahan and Betty White? Bea Arthur and Estelle Getty. Greg goes first.
Oh my God, that was so many names that just went out there.
So just guess A, B, C, or D.
That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go with C.
All right.
Cappy.
I'm going with D.
I'm with Cap. I'm going with D.
I'm going with Ruma and Getty. Still Getty.
The answer, Greg, is on the board.
Ruma, right. Bergman takes the lead.
And Betty White were very close. Bea Arthur did not get along with anybody on
Jeez,
the show.
What a crank.
She did not get along with anybody.
And by the way, Andy, when you go to Cappy, you have to call him King.
Okay, King.
Why?
That's what
no,
they
it's only if you want something from me.
Okay.
Want money
good.
Or tickets to an event.
Cappy,
or
so far, King, you're 0 for everything.
Okay, Cappy, yeah. I actually had this question just for you. True or false, Betty White and Rue McClanahan appeared on the same episode of The Love Boat. True or false, they appeared, Betty White and Rue McClanahan, on the same episode of Love Boat.
What do you think, Cap?
I'm going to say true.
Jorge?
I'm going to say true.
Greg?
True.
It's too weird for you to have made up. I'm going true. I'm with the crowd.
You are all correct.
Yeah.
They appeared
Cap's
on a 1984 episode entitled How Do I Love Thee, No More Alimony, Authoress. Others appearing on this episode included Carol Channing, Dick Van Patten, Michelle Phillips, Adam Alan Thicke, and the great Fred Willard.
Fred Willard's such a great guy.
Yes, he was.
Okay. Bergman has the lead. He's got three. Jorge and I have two, and Cap has one.
Okay.
How many questions are left?
Three.
Okay.
The song Thank You for Being a Friend by Andrew Gold was actually released in 1978 on his third album, and then it got covered for the Golden Girls. That's the version we're hearing right now.
True.
How high did the original reach in the Billboard Hot 100 in 1978? Number one, number 25, number 50, or it never charted at all? Number one, number 25, number 50, or never charted at all? John goes first.
25.
Jorge.
25.
Greg.
Never charted at all.
Cappy.
Agree. Never charted.
John and Jorge, 25.
Boom.
1978.
All right. There are two left. Cap needs to get them both just to stay in it. Bergman, Jorge, and I are all tied with three each.
Woo-wee.
Okay. Do you have a tiebreaker, by the way?
Yeah, I've got one more question if need be. True or false, The recently departed Queen Elizabeth was a massive Golden Girls fan. True or false? Jorge goes first.
False.
Greg.
I'm going to say true.
Cappy.
True.
I think that sounds true. I'll go true.
Everybody but Jorge gets a point. She was a huge Golden Girls fan, so much to the point where she had them perform a live show in England. She flew them out there to do a performance for them in 1988.
Right, so this is the last question, right?
This is the last question, unless we need a tiebreaker.
We might. Bergman and I each have 4. Jorge has 3. And Cap has 1. So Bergman and 2. I have to go
Cap
first.
Cap has 2.
Oh, Cap has 2. Okay, so Cap, you can play spoiler, but you can't win it. Bergman, you and I have to go last.
Okay.
All right, here we go.
Which of these famous people appeared as an Elvis impersonator on The Golden Girls? Quentin Tarantino, Pete Rose, Jay Leno, or Priscilla Presley? Quentin Tarantino, Pete Rose, Jay Leno, or Priscilla Presley appeared as a Elvis impersonator on The Golden Girls. Greg goes first.
We have to go first. Yeah, because we have to lead. Do you want me to go or do you want to go?
Yeah, you go. Wait, so do that again.
Which of these famous people appeared as an Elvis impersonator on The Golden Girls? Quentin Tarantino, Pete Rose, Jay Leno, or Priscilla Presley?
Okay. All right, Greg, I do not know, so just pick something different than me.
I was going to go different than
you. All right, I'll say Quentin Tarantino.
So I don't know why you would put Priscilla Presley in there if it wasn't her, so I'm going to go Priscilla Presley.
That's a good guess. Jorge?
Jay Leno.
Cap?
Tarantino.
John Ireland, who's never seen this show. Quentin Tarantino, back in the day, was pursuing acting.
I knew he was an actor.
Yes.
I knew he was an actor.
He appeared among many Elvis impersonators in a two-part episode for Sophia's wedding. There was an Elvis theme. So there you go.
Well, you know my quirky thing about Quentin Tarantino, Cap? Have you ever heard this about me?
Tell me.
I hate Pulp Fiction.
Really?
It's Sedano's favorite movie.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites, too.
It didn't work for me.
Why?
And I actually later in life became friends with Sam Jackson, golf with him a lot, which is a great role with him.
Sam Jackson? Like not Samuel L. Jackson?
Well,
Sam?
That's his
formal
name.
They're friends, Cappy.
Oh. But I watched it and I went, this movie's kind of all over the place. It just didn't work
for
me.
Did you tell him that you don't like it?
Yeah, but he said, still got the check. yeah, it just didn't. But is that everybody's favorite Tarantino movie?
I would say it's the consensus favorite.
Yeah, I loved Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
It's a great movie.
I thought that was great.
Jackie Brown is my favorite Tarantino movie.
Thought it was great. You know,
it's a great movie.
Django Unchained.
Django Unchained is great.
Just Pulp Fiction didn't work for me for whatever reason.
When's the last time you've seen it?
I watched it once and didn't even finish it.
I'll
give it another chance.
Go back again.
Sure.
But it's not as bad as the I've never seen the Golden Girls like that. Like, Andy, you seem to be very offended almost by that.
I find it more shocking than offensive.
Well, I'm not in the demo. Well, I am now because I'm 59.
But everybody's the demo. Like, that show is universally watched.
When was it on? What night?
1980. I don't remember which night.
Because if it came out in the 80s, I was already in college, and nobody watches any TV in college.
Tell that to all the college people at USC watching Beverly Hills 90210 and Melrose Place every Wednesday night, like me.
Melrose Place, highly underrated. That's all I'm going to say.
Amazing show.
Highly underrated. By the way, Game of Games is presented by Call Jacob. Winning matters. That's why after an accident, you go to calljacob.com or call 844-24-JACOB. That's 844-24-JACOB. That's our buddy Jacob and Marani. Jorge, hit the stager. It is time for Super Crosstalk, and we welcome to the program George Sedano. George, how you doing?
I'm good. Who the hell hasn't watched The Golden Girls?
I just haven't watched the whole episode, but I see it come on all the time because it's on the Hallmark Channel all night.
Like, and Nick at Night, I believe.
It's
Hallmark.
Like somebody's getting a trunkload of residuals off of that show.
And George, having grown up in Miami, I'm sure the show was really popular there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I mean, it wasn't really filmed in Miami, but nonetheless, they were supposed to be in Miami, kind of like Dexter was supposed to be in Miami.
Does anybody else have a show that it was super, super popular that you've never seen an episode of? For example,
okay, I got one.
Not an episode. Like, I didn't watch Breaking Bad, but that's because it was too slow to start, and I just I have a 3-episode limit. And but I did see 3 episodes.
Okay, here's mine. You ready for this? And this one, I've said it before, but people are shocked by it, but. Never seen an episode, not one, of The Simpsons.
Whoa.
Yeah, we've had
Wow.
Yep, not one.
All right, so I've got 2. Okay. never, ever seen an episode of Star Trek.
Like, not even Captain Kirk?
Not even Captain Kirk. And wow. Never, ever watched an episode of ER.
Really? Whoa, John, that is totally your type of show, though.
Yeah,
ER.
Just never did it.
Wow. That one is the Star Trek, whatever. Not everybody's into sci-fi. But ER, knowing how much you like shows like The West Wing and things
right. yeah,
like that,
that,
I'm stunned you didn't watch ER.
I think I'm turned off by hospital shows. I think well, that, you know.
Yeah, but that was the best one by far. None of the rest of them have been good since.
Like, I never
before.
Watched Shane Elsewhere.
I didn't watch that either.
Grey's Anatomy.
Grey's Anatomy.
You know.
Yeah. Chicago Hospital, whatever yeah. they call it.
Chicago Hope. Chicago Hope.
Chicago Hospital.
Well, no, because there's like three Chicago shows, right? There's the Chicago Fire, Chicago Police, Chicago Hospital, whatever. Yeah. All
right.
That stuff.
So I want to play some.
General Hospital.
General Hospital, never seen it, although there are a lot of hot soap girls on there that I would.
And Stephen A. Smith is on, has
yes.
a recurring character.
God,
on General
God bless
Hospital.
Him. Yeah. All right, I'm going to play some of you. Adam Silver had a press conference today.
Uh-oh, here we go.
At the NBA governor's meetings. And I don't know what I expected to happen to Robert Sarver, but after I read the report, the owner of the Suns, I mean, he's a bad guy. I thought they would probably throw the book at him. He got a one-year suspension and a $10 million fine. But our buddy Howard Beck, who used to be a Lakers beat writer for the LA Daily News in the Shaq Kobe era, asked what I thought was a great question of Adam Silver. You're going to hear Beck ask the question and Adam Silver answer it, and then I want to have you guys react to it. Here it was earlier today in Chicago. Oh, George, play the... All right, so Sonata, I'll start with you. What did you think of that answer?
He's caught between a rock and a hard place, basically. I mean, the commissioners of sports, and we all know this because we work in sports, but not everyone in the audience understands this all the time, is that they're part of their job is to be a piñata for the owners, okay? And in this particular case, he was doing the dance as best he could. Now, I heard Ramona yesterday, John, mention this when we were doing Crosstalk, that she doesn't believe this is over, and I would agree. Because LeBron's already tweeted in the last 7 minutes about this story. So I think that that will motivate more players. I don't think players... I heard you talking about this earlier. Why haven't the players spoken yet?
Yeah.
And I think that most players don't know what actually transpired there. Whereas with Sterling, we had heard the stuff for decades, right? Like, it wasn't like that was new to us. And then we had, to your point earlier, because I heard you talk about this earlier, is that there was a smoking gun. There was a tape, right? There
yeah.
It was inarguable. So I think that's why when Ramona said yesterday that this isn't over, I understood what she meant. And I think that now that the details are out, I think people will digest it. And I think there will be more backlash from the players in the league and even people in the league who aren't players, per se. Perhaps coaches, perhaps other employees in the league. And I think that this thing will take on another set of circumstances moving forward is what I already guessed. But my initial reaction is he's trying to do a dance because the owners, by their constitution, have to vote him out. And at the moment, it doesn't seem like they're willing to do that.
It's going to be a question of whether or not it becomes untenable for Robert Sarver to keep owning the Suns. Because after a while, it was untenable with Donald Sterling. Between the player reaction, between the public reaction, between sponsorship opportunities potentially going out the window. Remember with the Dodgers, that was part of with Frank McCourt. Like, ultimately, it's about the money. And the money is going to, in certain respects, keep Robert Sarver there because, as Adam Silver basically said, saying the quiet part out loud, when you are a billionaire, the rules are different for you. But if the money starts making this untenable in different respects, then maybe we move in a direction closer to Donald Sterling, if not all the way there.
Cap, what do you think?
Well, first, I think that usually when you hear a commissioner talk but not say anything, it's usually Roger Goodell. You know, I mean, you don't really hear Adam Silver ever get put into a corner like this where he's trying to figure out on the fly how he's going to talk his way out of it, and he did a terrible job. Cam, you just said it, man.
Have done in that situation then?
Well, I don't really know because I wasn't in the situation.
It's hard to say it's a terrible job. Now, I think he's done a pretty good job in the past. Now, he hasn't had to deal with this in this scenario. But, I mean, what is he supposed to do if the people that he works for say, hey, we're not voting him out? He's got to find a way to come across and explain that without running them under the bus either. So I don't know what he could. I don't know what he could have done that would have made it better.
I'm with Sedano here, Cap. I think that he did. He can't do anything to the owners because he works for them.
But what Andy said was right, which is that what he didn't say, but what he was saying, and everybody can hear it, is the rules are different for the billionaire. That's all.
I think where Adam Silver got in or set himself up poorly was specifically when he said the rights for owners are different than the rights of an employee because, and again, I don't think this is how Adam Silver literally meant it, but if you are taking it at its most literal, you are saying as an NBA owner and a billionaire, you have a right to talk this way in a way that an employee doesn't.
Well, if nothing else, you have the right to continue to hold on to your business.
Yes. Yeah,
we're not going to force you out.
Is, that is
yes,
true.
That, hey, but that's what he said.
Based on the bylaws in the NBA, they unfortunately, that is the reality of it. He can't change those bylaws without getting two-thirds approval.
But, you know, at least, like, can I just tell you guys, though, like, when you look at the NFL and you look at a guy like Daniel Snyder, right, like, you would think that the NFL owners would say, this guy is bad news for us, and we don't want him in our league anymore. But what they did was they said, oh, we're just making sure that he's not the owner anymore. Now his wife is the owner. It just occurs to me that I believe that Sarver owns, like, I want to say a little less than 40% of the Suns. And you know that means that there are a whole bunch of other people that own percentages of the team. So now everybody who's involved in that ownership group, I only kind of know about this because I know a couple of these dudes, everybody's humiliated. So why not? Why doesn't the NBA say, look, we have to have somebody else be the controlling owner?
Well, they do for a year. They need to appoint one. LeBron had tweeted earlier. Let me read the tweet because I think this is going to change the narrative on this story. This is LeBron 10 minutes ago. Read through the Sarver stories a few times now. I got to be honest, our league definitely got this wrong. I don't need to explain why. You all read the stories and decide for yourself. I said it before, and I'm going to say it again. There's no place in this league for that kind of behavior. I love the league and deeply respect our leadership, but this isn't right. There is no place for misogyny, sexism, and racism in any workplace. Don't matter if you own the team or play for the team. We hold our league up as an example of our values, and this ain't it. That is about as strong of a statement as a player has made against an owner ever.
Well, remember, LeBron actually said almost verbatim the same thing about Sterling.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. Like, I just think that, look, if it were me, and I don't know what the bylaws say about this stuff, okay, in the NBA, because I don't know the constitution of the NBA ownership off the top of my head. You know what I mean? I barely remember the amendments of the country, okay? So there's that. But I looked at it, and the thing I thought to myself was when George Steinbrenner got suspended banned from Major League Baseball, and Marge Schott got banned from Major League Baseball, it was definitely 2 years plus, if I recall correctly. But again, everybody's rules are different when it comes to these things. But if that is indeed the case, that he could not suspend him more than a year, then I am surprised that those are the bylaws for the NBA, considering that Major League Baseball, many, many moons ago, where it was able to do that with Steinbrenner and Marge Schott.
Stuff all the time. Like, leagues make new rules as they go.
But you got to have you got to get two-thirds ownership to agree on that stuff.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to remember. Refresh my memory. When Sterling got essentially...
They all voted him out. The only person that vocalized it outwardly was Mark Cuban, and he said, look, I what he did was reprehensible, but what I would say is we're going down the slippery slope if we're just going to take people's
teams
away.
I remember the phrase slippery slope, but how long did that take? I just don't remember.
Happened it happened fast.
Days, weeks, I don't remember the exact
time. Right, because
are we saying, can I just understand one thing? Are we saying that the Donald Sterling situation is different because there's an audio tape? Like the Ray Rice situation, he was originally suspended 2 games. Once there was a video, he was gone. He was out of the NFL. Is that what this is about? There's no audio?
I would argue that has something to do with it. Hey, Sinano, why do you think that guys who have been outspoken in the past on other things, guys like Chris Paul and Devin Booker, guys on the Suns team, have had nothing to say about this?
I don't know, because I don't know what their interactions were with Robert Sarver. So I don't know. I'm guessing Robert Sarver treats those guys really well. Whereas the problem with Donald Sterling, and the biggest difference between Donald Sterling and Robert Sarver, I've never heard anything that Robert Sarver treats players poorly. I've heard perhaps that maybe he's treated his coaches poorly or his management team poorly, but never the players. Whereas with Donald Sterling, he literally would treat them like pieces of meat. And say things openly towards the players like that. And so I think that it's not just the smoking gun of the videotape or the audio tape or whatever it was. It was a decades long history of Donald Sterling literally treating his players like they were, like he literally owned them.
And
you know
also
what I'm saying?
Donald Sterling was for decades one of the worst owners in sports, and the league wanted to get rid of him for a long time. But these are difficult battles. And, you know, Adam Silver said as much, another quiet part out loud, was basically, this is a tough fight. We're not sure we're up for this fight. And, you know, Sterling was somebody that they really wanted out anyway. And this became, a really easy way to get Donald Sterling out.
And I remember, I remember a specific incident that Baron Davis talked about.
You're fat.
When he, Donald Sterling said, I cursed him out in the locker room and was sitting there basically and he Baron told stories about how Donald would bring some of his alleged lady friends around or friends around and be look at this one. You know what I mean? Yeah. And that he would literally say words like that.
I was like, look at these black bodies. Look at these beautiful bodies. I mean, it was like
Robert Sarver. For as awful as he is, wasn't doing that for decades. So I think that there's a difference, John, if you're asking me why Chris Paul or Devin Booker or some, maybe they don't know, maybe they've heard the stories, but they've never encountered it themselves, because to my knowledge, Robert Sarver, particularly with his players, was like, give them anything they want.
And the Suns, the Suns also had been reasonably successful under Sarver. Sterling, again, the Clippers were a laughingstock.
Yeah, and he had a 25, 30-year history of treating people lousy.
But he's done, dude. I'm telling you guys right now. They can suspend him for a year, and they can take the $10 million from him, which, by the way, the $10 million doesn't mean anything to him, obviously. But I would think that between now and the end of the year suspension, they will find a way to say, this is such negative publicity for a league that has been so progressive when it comes to race relations in America, particularly over the last 2+ years. There's no way this guy comes back. They'll knock him out before he comes back.
Maybe. All right, well, Sedano and Cap will talk more about this. Supercross Talk is brought to you by Coors Light, keeping Southern California chill all season long. Yeah. Andy and I will be back tomorrow. Coming up next, Sedano and Cap, ESPN LA.